You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes in the West Indianapolis Community News. Today, we're continuing the tour de media, talking about the Pacers, and joining me on the other line to do that from the Indianapolis Star, Jay Michael. Jay, how's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. Still can stay busy, even though there's no basketball, so there's plenty to do, actually.
Yeah, that's always my first question. Without sports, what are you doing during the quarantine to stay busy and have fun?
Housework, man. Nothing. Yeah. But do it yourself, or I think I'm going to quit this job and go into do it yourself work.
Were you on McMillan's conference call last week?
I was not. I was off last week, and I talked to Nate actually maybe a couple weeks before that. I talked extensively, but I was not on that call.
He said on the call, someone asked him what he was doing to stay busy. He said, "Well, my wife's keeping me busy around the house." So yeah. You and him are on the same schedule, apparently.
Pretty much, man. Got a lot of stuff to do, man. You learn. You got no excuses to not do certain things. So no need to hire a handyman. It's all me.
Yeah, so you just wrote about Victor Oladipo and his contract. I want to get to that later and look forward into some playoff stuff. But we're going to zoom back a little bit first because that's what we do during this time off from basketball. What did you think of the Pacers season leading up to when things eventually got suspended?
I thought they kind of hit their groove. They were, I guess if I go back to kind of what my evaluation of them was going into the season was, you know, they'll be lucky. They consider themselves fortunate. They're a couple of games over 500 by the time Oladipo comes back, which of course they were much well above that. So they were ahead of schedule for me in that regard. That they would hit some rough spots without when he got back, which they did. Had that, remember they had that 6-game losing streak before All-Star break. But I thought the key to what they were going to be, especially if they're going to be a team that could get out of the first round, was going to be dictated with how they played going into, you know, after All-Star break, going to that stretch run to get ready for the playoffs. And I thought they were playing great basketball. And more to me, that was more important than being 39 and 26. Because, you know, you could last year at this time, they had a good record on paper, but they were trending in the wrong direction. They had a good record, but they weren't playing their best basketball. They were regressing post-Oladipo. This time, they were getting better leading into the playoffs, kind of the way Brooklyn did last year. You know, Brooklyn lost in the first round. They had a much better showing in the first round of the playoffs than the Pacers because they actually were trending in the right direction, even though their record wasn't as good as Indiana's last year. They were playing their best basketball and things kind of started to click at that time. So that to me is ideally what you want to be doing to give yourself a chance. And I think that's more indicative of where you're at as a team than necessarily, well, you're a 6 seed or a 5 seed or a 4 seed. But I also think that they made some significant tweaks to what they were doing that also that helped them, the Pacers, get better later in the season. So I thought they were in a pretty good groove, and it was probably the best that we've seen Miles Turner play all year, the best that we've seen him play with Sabonis.
Yep.
Moving away from Justin Holiday being the undersized four, having to defend big fours and using Jakarr Sampson more, those kinds of things, you know, and part of too, they had some injuries, so that kind of necessitated as well. I think they found something in changing some of their defensive concepts and not, you know, being, hey, we've been doing it this way for years, let's keep doing it this way, that they were forced to make some changes, and those changes worked. And I think some teams that they were facing weren't quite used to seeing them, and that actually helped them. So I just think overall, just chemistry-wise, scheme-wise, and of course, as they started to get healthier, I thought they started to play better and look closer to a team that, you know, I think a lot of people, myself included, I thought it might take them a full year to become a team that could get out of first round of playoffs. So I thought they were ahead of schedule, and it goes to show you just because you had a 6-game losing streak before the All-Star break, that terrible loss that they had to Toronto where they blew the lead late. You can't get too high about a win, a big win, and you can't get too low about a big loss or a few big losses. because it is indeed a marathon, and they were actually starting to pull ahead, I thought.
Yeah, that after that Toronto game, basically, they had one bad half against Milwaukee, but they were pretty good every step of the way in every other game. You know, they beat San Antonio pretty easily on the road, had a good win over Portland, you know, went toe-to-toe and beat Dallas. They had Boston. If Vic didn't take that outlandishly stupid shot at the end of the game with whatever on the shot clock with like 40 seconds left, you know, they did all the right things for basically 3 weeks after that Toronto loss. They were really rounding in form. It sucks that the season got taken away right then for them because, yeah, it's like you said, it's the opposite of what we saw right before the All-Star break where every time I got on Twitter, the sky was falling around this team. It was absurd. It's like they just got Oladipo back. Like they're not going to be good now. And Chad Buchanan even said that on Basketball Day Indiana. You know, he said, okay, it's our second season when Vic comes back. You know, things will be a little worse. Then they figured it out, and they were good. And it was really a bummer timing that right when, like you're saying, you know, they are ahead of schedule, especially Vic in that last game against Boston, 27 points, finally looks more like the guy they had in prior seasons, and then it's taken away two nights later. But I share a lot of your assessments on where they were at. I don't know if I'm as – maybe bullish is the wrong word. I don't know if you're bullish necessarily. But, you know, you said they were trending way up. You know, I think they were hitting a groove. I don't know if I would have pinned them in a playoff series yet, but we'll see. But speaking of Vic, you just wrote a ginormous bomb reporting piece for the Indy Star about – the Pacers are not going to let him go, with some sources talking about, you know, that they were going to do whatever it takes to keep him. What'd you think about all that? What'd you think about what the sources were telling you? And did you get the vibe that seems like they were going to push hard for a big extension, or that they were going to wait till he's a free agent and then give him the full 5-year max deal?
They're going to wait till he's a free agent. And that's kind of what Vic wants. Actually, it's funny. Like I got another call today based off of my report from another source involved in it, and who gave me even more detail, but kind of reaffirmed some of the things that I put out already. So I think I kind of completed the circle fully. I six or seven people weigh in on this for me. Look, this is a time of year, especially right now, when there's no basketball going on. I think a lot of speculation will be thrown out there about, you know, Victor could leave. It's not really necessarily based on anything that he said or done.
Right.
I think I reported last year that they kind of chatted about potentially having an extension, but it was not formal. It was never a sit down, have a discussion, let's try to hammer this out. And then one side walked away like, oh, we got no deal. They never really got to that point to where it was formal. It was kind of informal. And Victor wants to try to get the biggest deal possible, which is, you know, he wants to wait more likely than not. Despite, you know, I know there's a train of thought like, hey, with his knee injury, would you want to get some security locked in now and not chance it? No, he's betting on himself. That's what he always talks about anyway. He's going to wait. If he went to the Pacers and said, hey, I want to get an extension done, yeah, they'd do it because that's what – but they have a good relationship. And anything that kind of portrays that as some sort of volatile, hostile, dysfunctional, not trusting sort of relationship, that's just not true. And I think both sides are on the same page. And if Victor wants to wait until he becomes an unrestricted free agent where he can get the best, the biggest and best deal possible, that's not going to be an indication of that there's a rift. It's that makes most sense for him financially,
right,
provided he clearly doesn't, you know, re-injure himself and have any setbacks.
Right. I think that phrasing is going to confuse people who don't quite understand the rules always, because when it sounds like, if you know, but for people who don't understand that waiting to be an unrestricted free agent, he can make like $7 or $8 more million a year, just yeah, because his extension can only be capped out at 120% of his current salary, whereas exactly, his max is a lot higher. You know, I guess the cap falling could impact that a little bit, but he can make way more money by waiting. It's not that he is, you know, necessarily – I mean, he's not an idiot. He's going to feel out what offers there are if he does. But, you yeah, know, waiting to get there isn't like, I'm doing this to punish the Pacers. It's I can make way more money.
It's smart business. Like, exactly, if he – not like, yeah. I mean, look, if Victor thought for any reason, like, hey, man, you know, his doctor told him, like, hey, your knee could blow out any day and you'll be done play again, then maybe you sign the extension right now just to get Bird in hand, right?
But yeah, the Eric Gordon strategy, right?
From pretty much, yeah. Yeah. So, but if you wait, it's smart. It's a smarter decision. But, yeah, it's the 120% because he's making, what, $21 million this year. Yep. So you make 120% of that, which is, you know, those are the limits. So I think that's kind of where the confusion comes in. And, you know, I think I saw something where they said, well, he was offered 4 years before the season. Well, he couldn't
be. Can get 4 years. Yeah.
4 years. The max extension you could have gotten is 3.
Well, when I read that, I was wondering if that was like, that would have been his total deal. But even then, the extension they were offering would have been like 2 years, $36 million or something, like a joke. It's like, why would he ever take that?
Yeah. It's so, it didn't make, you know, there's nothing to it that, you know, I think that didn't that report come from New York?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. So,
well, mention the name of the writer. I almost just said, but yes, it did come from a New York person.
Oh no, it don't even matter the name of the writer to me. It's just like, I know how New York is.
It's just, fair enough.
It's just as it is. I mean, I think the Knicks put a lot of things out to kind of, you know, make their fan base feel like, hey, you know, we're trying to do something, and, you know, to kind of cover up for Jim Dolan and all of that music. So, I, you know, if you had to ask me and I had to guess, I would say the Knicks themselves are probably the one, you know, why wouldn't you? Hey, they've been, how long did they say Kevin Durant was going to come there?
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's kind of what it is. And, you know, that's how the business is. And I understand that, but yeah, it's, Oladipo, look, if Oladipo hit the open market, would the Knicks be interested? Yes, there'd probably be a bunch of other teams interested too. I mean, we could pull out any name of any all-star and say that's true without calling anyone.
Right.
If LeBron James became a free agent and said he's open to 29 other teams, I could tell you right now the Pacers would be interested without calling anyone. Right?
We did it.
Yeah. Come on. So
that's going to end up on some aggregation tomorrow, Jay.
You know that, right? Oh, yeah. You know how that works, so I got
to
be careful.
Hey, guys. Just going to continue to talk to you about Built Bar, the lovely people over at Built Bar. Built Bar is making the best tasting protein bar ever. They're really tasty. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, and they make 16 amazing flavors. 8 of them are chocolate nut-based, and 8 of them are chocolate nut-free. And they're covered in 100% chocolate, so they're super soft, delicious, and easy to chew. And their big selling point is they're healthy. You know, a lot of protein bars are high on calories. These ones are not. They're still really high on protein. They're low on sugar. They're low on carbs. And you can join the many people who are trying Built Bar by going to BuiltBar.com and using the promo code LOCKEDON. That will give you $10 off your first order. So go to BuiltBar, BuiltBar.com, and use the code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order. That's BuiltBar.com with the code LOCKEDON.
All right, so now you got to take off your sources shoes and your reporting shirt and all that. You are the GM of the Pacers. What are you going to offer, Vic? Are you willing to go to the max?
I think you have to.
That's what it takes to keep him. I agree.
Yeah, you can't afford to play games with this stuff. You know, if you are, instead of the Indiana Pacers, if you're the LA Lakers, I might play hardball with them a little bit, nudge them a little bit to see if I can get them at a number that's a little bit more, maybe, you know, just because you're the, but you can do that because you're the Lakers, right?
Right.
You can't do that because you're the Pacers.
Right.
You can't afford to do that. You lose your star, the face of your franchise, the guy who I think is going to be, provided he's able to get back to that level, you know, an all-star multiple times. You gotta do it. It's gonna be the cost of doing business. You can't get frugal. Because I always think of, you know, I go back, I was in Orlando back when Shaquille O'Neal was hitting the market, and they decided that he should like to be here and we should offer him a deal that's, you know, not the max. And, you know, you see how that worked out. He ended up going to LA. You don't do yourself any favors. If you're a market and that kind of market and you got a star player, you got to keep them, because it's also a business. Aside from being on the court, it's a business decision. Now, you are taking a risk, but I think it's a risk that you have to take. I don't think this is a time to be cheap. And, you know, look, I know Herb Simon's kind of worried about that perception of himself in the franchise as well, which is probably why that report about them insulting Oladipo in an offer that was non-existent kind of probably tweaked him a little bit.
Yeah.
But for at least from what I understand, it did. But it's you know, so you can't afford to do it from a PR perspective. He can still be good. There's risk involved, but you know, it's sometimes, you know, you got to take that risk. On the other side of the deal, maybe by the time the Victor reaches the end of the deal, maybe he's no longer a max worthy player. But to me, you cross that bridge when you come to it. You got to take bird in hand right now.
Yeah, it might cripple them in the future, but also, like you just brought up Herb, Vic's deal kind of pays for some of itself business wise, just because local guy, fan favorite, awesome with the fans, you know, all that stuff makes him more valuable to the team too, in a way that even he might be a negative value contract for the last couple of years on that, but his value to the organization is still super high.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I agree with you. And I might even go farther than throwing the full max at him. And even this coming off season, he's not a free agent, but like a lot of my decision making might be, hey, Vic, what should we do? You know, see what he wants and try to do what he wants.
Yeah.
Just so he can be happier in his shoes.
There's no problem with that. I have no issue. A lot of it, like I said, it depends on your franchise and where that franchise is at as well. I mean, certain franchises can afford to do that. Other franchises got to be more aggressive like that and say, hey, what will make you happy? I've always been a proponent. You know, when I was in D.C. and doing the Wizards, I used to always say, like, just go to, you know, Bradley Beal and say, okay, what's going to take to make you happy?
Right.
And use that as your starting point. And maybe your his desires and wants meets up with yours, and there's really no negotiate. Well, done. We can do it. Just get it done and get it out of the way. Yep. But I think you got to assess what's going to make him happy first. And especially you in a situation where you don't get a lot of stars wanting to come to D.C., wanting to come to Indiana in free agency, I think that's why you got to make that little extra effort so you can keep those guys. Because it's not like a bunch of big name guys who are going to put butts in seats and walking through the free agency door every year saying, hey, I want to play for the Indiana Pacers. So I think that's why you got to make that extra.
That's something else that surprised me about the Brogdon addition is like, did Giannis really, was he like, yeah, whatever, if he goes, he goes. You know, like that surprised me.
Yeah, he wasn't priority-wise. Brogdon was, I think, third.
I know, that's crazy. Like, if Giannis says he wants to keep him, you keep him. But
yeah, Middleton was ahead of him, and I think once you got past, I'm trying to remember the conversation I was having at the time. I think it was $65 million. Once they kind of had an artificial number in mind that they were willing to go up to, but they had a ceiling on what they wanted to do with Brogdon, and they just didn't. Yeah, it just wasn't. You know, they had already invested in Bledsoe too, and you know, we already had George Hill, and thought, you know, they can keep him at a lesser number. So I guess in a way I understand it. I guess the flip side of it is, if you look at his injury history, as we've seen this season, you know, maybe it makes sense. They made the right move, but I thought it was a move the Pacers had to make. I know a lot of people in hindsight, you know, it's 2020, like, oh, I should have never gotten Brogdon. They had to make that move to get Brogdon. And, you know, if you don't get Brogdon in the offseason, you probably don't get Lamb. You probably don't get, you know, you needed to make some sort of splash. And despite all the injury concerns he's had, the team was still in pretty good position to get up as high as a 3 seed going into the playoffs. So despite all of that, they were pretty good. And when he played well, the team, I mean, you know.
Really good, yeah.
Very good. So you have to take – that's what I'm saying. Like, certain teams, to me, have to take greater risks with players than other teams and vice versa just because. And I thought, you know, is a guy like Brogdon wants to come to your team here in Indiana and you can get him from Milwaukee and all of the things and what you had to give up for him, I was okay with giving up the picks for him. I don't think very highly of the drafts that are coming up for the most part. I thought, you know, it's calculated risk. You got to take certain risks. Other teams are in certain positions where they don't have to take those risks. They don't have to give up picks and do X, Y, and Z. You know why? Because a big name superstar free agent, like say Kevin Durant, is going to just walk through your door and say, hey, I want to play for you. That's not going to happen in Indiana, right? It's very unlikely that's going to happen. So it changes what you're forced to do in free agency as a franchise. You got to be more aggressive. And I thought them being aggressive and pursuing Brogdon right away was, you know, because he was on a short list of guys. And I know a whole lot of people were outraged at what they heard about a report about Ricky Rubio. Ricky Rubio was not at the top of their list. That he was a fallback if a bunch of other stuff fell through. And it kind of worked out for him.
Yeah. I think Ricky Rubio is good, man. That was sad. Like, I get that he's not like a sexy addition or anything like that, but Ricky Rubio's pretty good, man. Like, why was everybody dumping on that guy?
He can be good. Here's the funny thing. I've always liked him. I thought his last year in Utah was brutal, and so I wasn't very high on him because he was, you know, he was brutal. But I mean, then now you look at like Mike Conley in Utah wasn't very good this year either. Yeah. Maybe it's something with the way Quinn Snyder. I haven't watched him enough.
Their offense is complicated as hell.
Yeah, it's, you know, so maybe that has something to do with it more so than I didn't think Rubio was. I was like, yeah, I'm not crazy about Rubio, but I liked him pre Utah. And I've actually was pretty high on him pre-Utah. And so he's like one of those guys, man. I kind of, you know, I thought – and then when I saw him the way he started out in Phoenix, okay. Maybe it's the whole Utah system with point guards. And so there's probably something to that.
Yeah, I agree with you there, especially because Mitchell has the ball so often and things like that.
Yeah.
Let's pivot here for another topic that – maybe wasn't hotly contested, but was discussed a little bit, especially because the Celtics were the last team the Pacers played, you know, as they were hanging around that 5-4 battle for seeding and the 5-6 battle with Philly. There's a lot of teams they could play in the first round. Miami, Boston, Philly, even if things break a little weird, Toronto's in the mix there. In the terms of just the Pacers winning and going to the second round, who do you think their ideal matchup would have been in round one?
Miami.
That's my choice as well.
Miami, yeah. Yeah, I was actually just talking to someone from Miami.
Wow.
I was just talking to someone from Miami who and we were kicking around this idea. And I said, you know what? I said, I think even though, you know, you guys have beaten the Pacers twice this year, it was a classic case of the Pacers might not win a season series against you, or, you know, people might look at the results of the two games in the regular season and say, oh, Miami's going to win this. The classic case of the Pacers, I think, were trending in the right direction, and Miami played their best basketball early, and they're trending in the wrong direction. So I think it was partly, I hadn't been a big fan. Like, one of the funny things that I would tweet about when I watched Miami play, like, man, I remember during when the Pacers played, I'm like, man, how are they allowing him to get away with Duncan Robinson? And who's the other kid who can shoot? There's two shooters on the floor who can't defend.
Myers Leonard.
Huh? Was it Hero?
Myers Leonard, Hero. Yeah.
Yeah, and a bunch of those guys, I was like, there's no way they should be able to defend this lineup because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. And, you know, they you know, Eric Spoelstra running his own defense, which is something I never thought I would. If you'd asked me, would Eric Spoelstra run any sort of zone defense, like, 10 years ago, I say absolutely not. That's something he'd never do. But, you know, that they've not only run it, but they run it so heavily.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they rely on a lot. That's, I mean, if you look at the way they went from playing in those championship years and even immediately after that to what they play now, it's night and day.
Yeah.
He's changed, and correctly so. He's adjusted to the personnel. But I think that because of that, I think you're starting to see some of the limitations. And that, in a seven-game series, I think you could pick apart what Miami does, what they've been doing so well. Love Jimmy Butler. I know a lot of people in Indy hate him. Because
I love Jimmy Butler.
I absolutely love him. I'd have him on my team any day. I like crazy people on my team. I like tyrants. But I understand that not every team is equipped to handle one. But for all the things that Jimmy Butler does, I just don't think that would be quite enough, because I still think skill-wise, the Pacers are better than them at a lot of things. I think the there's some things that are a little bit easier to solve with Miami than with Indiana, and that Miami, again, played their best basketball early in the season when a lot of people weren't expecting to see some of these things. And I think the teams have started to adjust it. That's why they kind of started to dip once the calendar turned to the 2020. And, you know, and that's a perfect example that I mean, like, play their best basketball early. Pacers are playing a better basketball now. And I think confidence-wise, the Pacers are going to be better. Not only because – the other reason, of course, because they have Oladipo back. And, you know, I think of that first game that they lost in Miami, had no business losing. Didn't they give up, like, 4 or 5 shots on the final possession?
Yes, Miami? They were winning, and then they still had a chance, and Aaron Holiday didn't pass to a wide-open McDermott at the very end of the game.
It's ridiculous. Like, yeah. That, you know, stuff like that, it's like they'll be better than that by the time you get to the end of the season. So I throw all of those factors in. Yeah, Myers Leonard and Duncan Robinson and those guys all on the court at the same time trying to defend some of the Pacers' better skilled guys. And the Pacers actually, like I said, making some of the adjustments that they've made, I just think they would have been a better team. Would they sweep them? No, not necessarily, but I could see them winning that series in six games against Miami. And of course, by the way, I really wanted to go to Miami. So
that's true. It is definitely the warmest city of the bunch.
Hey guys, so I'm going to use this break to talk to you about the lovely people over at Blinkist. Blinkist is one of the best life hacks that there is. You don't have free time anymore. You can't read or work on personal development. And now that stuff is opening back up, you might be traveling more, going into work. You might just have less time. Blinkist is really unique and they can help you fix that problem. It works on your phone, your tablet, and your web browser. And what they do is they take the best key takeaways and need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down to 15 minutes. Just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people love reading books. Blinkist can help make that easy for you. And 12 million people are on Blinkist right now, and they have a massive growing library of all kinds of books. So go check it out. It's perfect for, you know, learning a lot of things really fast, and 15 minutes is nothing. It basically can be your commute to work. So what you can do is go to Blinkist.com/MBA to start your 7-day free trial with them, and you'll save 25%, but that's only when you go to Blinkist.com/MBA. Check them out at Blinkist.com/MBA.
So Boston is a popular pick for fans because their center situation is weird, and outside of Tice, they have no interior defense at all. So people think Sabonis can just feast against them, and he kind of has, but I agree with you. Miami is my answer as well for two reasons. One, they almost won in Miami with no Brogdon or Oladipo. By the way, Brogdon and Oladipo have not played against the Heat a single time this year, either one of them. So that is a big factor to me, is that they played them close and tough without those guys. The second time they played the Heat, they got smoked. All right, they got smoked at home. That's embarrassing. That day, no one remembers, because that's the day, A, that TJ Warren fought Jimmy Butler, and B, that's the day Vic announced his return date. And mm-hmm. I still wonder if there was this cloud over everybody's head on the team that day, because no one cared about the game. You were there. We were all talking to Nate before the game for the normal pregame press conference stuff. Every question was about Vic. He even had to say, or Benner or someone stepped in and was like, hey, any questions about this game? And no one had any. You know, it was all about Depot coming back. So that day was just weird. And I think they're talented-wise, I agree with you. I think they're as good as this team, especially if they get their two star guards back and can compete with them. They have matchup for matchup the guys that can do it. They just haven't had them all in one game. If the playoffs come and they're healthy, I have been saying most of the season, I think Miami is the team that they would match up well against.
Yeah. I take that any day of the week. And I don't, you know, honestly, I'd feel good with them. If they play Boston, I'd actually be okay with that for them too, their perspective. I still think Miami's still a better matchup, but I think how good Miami has been early this year is more of a testament to me of how good of a coach Eric Spoelstra is, which I've always believed he's been. Even when he got no credit during the big 3 years, he was a damn good coach. And I think it's more of a testament to him and what he's been able to do, because he doesn't have the most skilled guys top to bottom, meaning skilled in terms of he has some guys who are pretty one-dimensional on that squad. He's gotten a lot out of that group, and I think part of that's because Jimmy Butler is just such a tough guy who just disrupts so much. Come on, who wouldn't want to see Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren go head up in a series? I think they have to be an over or under on ejections, because I think there will be a couple.
Yeah.
I'd say TJ and Jimmy will combine for at least four ejections in that series. So
four. Wow.
Yeah, I could see that. Combine, yeah.
Over half the games. That'd be crazy.
Yes, I could see that. Four ejections.
I just want to see Warren in the playoffs, period. Like, that dude's never had to get laser focused at the end of the year.
Yeah.
What if he's just like flawless? Like, you know, his execution is just perfect when I feel like he could be a killer.
Yeah, I think when the pressure, for whatever reason, I think when the pressure is the heaviest has been on him, when he gets in that zone, you could see it, man. When he gets that little bunny hop in his step, when he does that pull up for that mid range, if he knocks that first, second one down, he's going to have a 15 for 17 night shooting.
It's over. In Charlotte and in Philly especially, I remember him just like, you just can't stop him. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and it's, you know, and what he does defensively, you know, he can foul too much. Sometimes he gets too hyped up and he'll, you know, kind of ruin some of his really good defense by being too aggressive. But his defensive instincts, something that really, you know, really nobody knew much about him having that, because it never was brought out of him in Phoenix. And speaking of Phoenix, like when we went to Phoenix, I went to Phoenix early on that one of the road trips, because that game, he completely owned Devin Booker. I mean,
he did on both ends. Yeah.
Yeah. He tore him up. All that's the thing. It's not like he's playing great defense, therefore he doesn't have it on offense. He did it both sides. And you don't, you know, if he's able to turn that in more consistently night in, night out, I mean, I think a lot of people have completely slept on him in terms of, you know, if who knows where the voting would be for all of these kind of awards. But to me, TJ Warren definitely would have to be your top three or four, maybe even higher for most improved players, because defensively. But I really question voters how much attention they pay to defense other than looking at who's right. Leading the blocks. But
everybody's just looking at points per game improvement.
Pretty much. And that's why, like, defensive – I mean, you know, I was talking to somebody about this recently too, about, like, how all the bad defensive team selections, votes that guys have gotten. I was like, God, it's based on reputation. We were talking about Kobe. Kobe was really good defensive player at certain points, but, you know, his career, he then became a little bit overrated as a defender. And I was talking to Michael Lee from The Athletic, because he did a piece on Sean Marion yesterday. And I was talking to him. I said, man, I totally did not realize Sean Marion never made an all-defensive team, which was absurd. Like, it's...
Yeah, that's all I think of him as, is an amazing defender.
Crazy, but it's crazy to think about it. Like,
yeah.
Trevor Ariza is never made... Well, Trevor Ariza, at his best, was a monster. Like, he won series for people because he was put on the toughest offensive player and locked them down. Like... And it's like, wow, not only did he not make an all-defensive team, I remember Ariza not even getting votes one year where he was clearly a top-10 defender in the league. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, I think because voters don't necessarily recognize and watch – because to me, in order to vote on defense or to recognize a complete picture with a guy like TJ when you're trying to assess most improved, you got to pay attention to defense. And the defensive side of the ball is harder to gauge, and you can't use stats to do it. And stats can be very misleading. You gotta watch the game. You gotta watch scheme. Everybody's scheme isn't the same. You gotta understand scheme. Who blew the rotation? What the responsibilities were to know? Oh, he not only did his job, he helped so and so who didn't do his job. But you don't you're not gonna see that in a highlight package. You're not gonna see that in point. You know, in steals, in rebounds, and stuff like that, in block shots. It's not gonna show you that. So I think people get a false sense of who's really worthy. And I think TJ Warren, because of the defensive side, is worthy of at least some strong consideration. I'm not saying he should definitely win it or be up there, but the fact that he won't probably even be anywhere in that conversation, seriously, I think is part of my issue.
Yeah. And to me, with some defensive stats that are supposed to be more all encompassing or, you know, reflect how much he's making other guys miss, right? But that doesn't take into account what his defensive improvement is. You know, they throw him on Luka, or they throw him on Dame, or they throw, you know, it's like TJ Warren of past would just, he'd get blown by Trevor Ariza. You know, Trevor Ariza would, he didn't try on defense. But now, he's exerting so much effort and playing his role and helping other guys that they're like, okay, yes, we're going to put you on, you know, Tatum, or we're going to put you on whoever the other team's stud is. And that's a huge, huge leap for him because, one, Brogdon has been a little slow-footed guarding those guys this year. And two, he was nowhere close to that guy last year. It's such a massive gap for me, even when I watched him, I thought his defense was a problem. But the perception of his defense versus what it's actually been is just a huge gap.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying, like, perception, what people may remember him as when maybe they saw him more before he came to Indiana, which isn't a market or a team that's on national TV a lot. So they'll just go on, well, last time I saw him, he wasn't very good on defense, so he must not be very good on defense still. And I think that kind of impacts decision-making as well. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, hey, man, you remember that game after they got torched by Devontae Graham in Charlotte? Next time they play Charlotte, second half of the game, they knew Devontae Graham was going to get hot. TJ Warren told Dan Burke, I want Devontae Graham, and he absolutely shut him down in the second half.
Yep.
Against a, you know, against a ball handling a good scoring point guard. So, you know, and I mean, how many times do you see guys not only do that, but who are willing to do that? And And yeah, it's just odd. And to me, it goes to show you that there's some guys, if you put a guy with the wrong team in the wrong situation, maybe with the wrong system, the wrong coach, maybe he doesn't have good influences around him, either on the coaching staff or the team, that he doesn't look as good of a player as he actually is. But the fact is, if you're TJ Warren, you got to that point and you got drafted in the lottery because you were really good. But if you're not put in the best situation, you don't maximize. And that's why we see some guys that we're surprised by. It's more sometimes an indication of where they've been in the failures of the organization they were with previously, more so than maybe a failure with them as a player, because they needed to be had the right buttons pushed to get to that level. And I think there's no doubt the way the Pacers have coached him has played a role in that too.
I agree 100%. Man, I think every time I have a media person on, I should do a TJ Warren segment, because everyone's impressed by him and there's a lot to talk about with him. It's insane. That's the best trade of the offseason by far for any team in the league.
Well, that was a give. That wasn't a trade. That was a giveaway. That was a chip. That was like that. Hey, recently I went to Goodwill and I threw three bags of clothes in a bin. That's what Phoenix did with TJ Warren. I mean,
have left money in the bags, right? That would make
pretty much money. Look, money all in the pockets. You just threw it away. That's pretty much. And look, I want to give Kevin Pritchard credit for making that deal, but really, that was really, you're gonna just give him to him?
Well, that was what Windhorst report said, is the Pacers were basically just like, really, that okay, sure. Like,
all right, well, you know, just so happens, yeah. They had offered him to Utah.
Oh, really? I did not.
Yeah. Know. Utah had other plans because they were gonna go after Mirotić and Bogey. And so they didn't have, you know, they were thinking like they were locked in on their guys. So, yeah, Utah had a chance to get him as well.
Wow. The Bogey Warren sweepstakes.
Yeah.
In the summer. Who knew?
Yeah. So
I didn't know that. Wow. Breaking news here on Locked On Pacers. Apparently. I had no idea about that. That's interesting. Jay, thanks for coming on, man. You got anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think I have anything else to talk about. I mean, I'm cooking a lot. If you want some recipes, I can
cooking a lot. I've been cooking more recently too. I got more time to do it. So,
well, I cook all the time because my wife doesn't cook.
Okay.
I have a wife who doesn't cook. Well, she makes peanut butter and jelly, so that's not really
cooking. Nothing is wrong with that.
Yeah, but I do all the cooking, and I cook everything. I cook most everything from scratch.
So what are you best at cooking out of everything?
Red beans and rice, shrimp and grits. I'm from Louisiana, so I know.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll knock people's socks off with that. I made swordfish the other night, by the way. I'm the one of the people, she doesn't usually like swordfish. I can make swordfish sing because, you know, the key to swordfish is you don't overcook it. Too many people overcook it because you'll dry it out. It's too thick. I cook it just below right when it's done, and then you let it sit for a minute, and the heat will naturally finish off the cooking. But when you cut into it, it's a juicy, flavorful steak of fish.
When are you starting your weekly cooking column in the Indy Star?
Hey, man, I've been thinking about it. You know, I think we have a restaurant critic position open, man. I'd be a beast.
I could just have you hop on over every once in a while. Well, Jay, thanks for coming on. Anyone listening, if you want to, I'm sure if you follow me on Twitter, you follow Jay on Twitter because he has information day to day at every practice, every game. But Jay's on Twitter at This Is Jay Michael. All his articles are in the Indy Star, including the one I talked about earlier about the Victor Oladipo extension stuff. Jay, thanks so much for coming on, man.
All right, Tony, anytime, man.
Adam will be back Friday to do another What If episode. That's all we got for today's show. We'll see you guys soon.